welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode of Locked On 49ers is brought to you by Built Bar. Use promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first box of Built Bars and a special offer, Memorial Week special through May 31st, another $5 off every box of Built Bars. So what are you waiting for? Use promo code Locked On at BuiltBar.com. My guest today is Jeff Deeney. He is an analyst at Pro Football Focus. He's a friend of the program. Although, Jeff, I just realized it's been a little bit too long since I've had you on the show. I think it was since before the wild ride that was the 2019 season.
I think it's been almost a year, just about, yeah. Hopefully I didn't do anything to offend you.
No. That's why I was like, wait, what? I thought I had talked to you like just a couple months ago, but that's the year went so by so fast. It was a crazy year. It was a fun year. I have less guests on during the season just because there's so much to get into and it's so regimented with the season and the breaking down the games that just happened and looking ahead to the new game. So I usually expand and try to get more people on the show during the off season, but I've got to have you on during the season too. You mentioned off the air about the Super Bowl is that you had to go on and do a radio hit the day after the Super Bowl. And I know a lot of listeners, it was like they had to decompress and stop listening to the podcast for a while because it hurt too much. And slowly I'll still get tweets. People say, today was the first day I listened to a podcast since the Super Bowl because it hurt too much. But just to rip that Band-Aid off one more time and go back to it, did you have a certain take? Did your idea of what happened late in the Super Bowl differ from the general consensus about how that Super Bowl went? Was it just a tip your cap to a team that turned out to be better in the Kansas City Chiefs, or was there something you think the 49ers could have done a lot different to win that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, I kind of agree with what you said. Yeah, I mean, I obviously watched the game Sunday. I had a radio hit on Monday night, which ended up being a nice little therapy session, I think. So I did watch the fourth quarter back on Monday, and I haven't watched it since. I have no interest. But I think it's just a matter of, obviously, the Niners defense played well for three plus quarters. I think just you look at the last 10 minutes, both on offense and defense, just the Chiefs made the plays to win the game and the 49ers didn't. I don't fault Shanahan or any of the play calling. I think Chris Jones got his hands on three different passes, I think, on those two last drives in the fourth quarter that caused incompletions. I think, the one big play you want to look at, you want to have back is Garoppolo missing Sanders deep, which would have probably given him the lead back. That's the one play they didn't make where he had Sanders open. He missed him. I think it just is the heartbreaker. But I think they held him in check for three plus quarters. And then, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes and made a couple just outstanding, ridiculous plays. And the Niners offense couldn't counter. And that was the game. I mean, everyone ripping on Shanahan because, the play calling and he blew the 28-3 lead, which is a whole nother, I think, farce to get into too, but the Chiefs made the plays and the Niners didn't is kind of the way I look at simplicity.
There's so many little things that could have happened too, because everyone remembers the big plays, but if just one of those balls doesn't get batted down or timing is a little bit different on a play, or maybe you break off a run here, or just and you got the feeling the Niners were just that one little play away from starting to really march down the field again, and it just changed the complexity of the whole last 7 minutes of the game. It could have all been so different with just one play, and they just everything snowballed and went Kansas City's way. But I don't want to get too much into that because people are like probably having PTSD right now thinking about the Super Bowl and how that thing ended. I want to look forward at the 2020 49ers, and I guess we can start with the draft picks. And the Niners were one of the best teams in football, and looking at Pro Football Focus's grades, the Niners were the only team that graded in the top five, both offense and defense, last year. And they wanted to maintain that. So in the draft, they replaced the best players they lost, which was a defensive tackle, Javon Kinlaw, replacing DeForest Buckner, and a wide receiver, Brandon Ayuk, replacing Emmanuel Sanders. What are your thoughts on the two first-round selections for the 49ers?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a huge DeForest Buckner fan. I mean, when they had, I think it was the seventh pick that year, he was the guy I wanted them to take. I mean, he's been just extremely productive and most of all durable. I mean, I don't know how many snaps he played that Chip Kelly year. I think he played more than any other lineman in the league, but just incredibly productive. I just think you get to a case where now the Niners, have obviously accumulated a lot of talent, especially a lot of young talent. A lot of these guys need extensions. They're up against the cap and you can't sign everybody. You have to make some difficult decisions. And DeForest Buckner on his rookie deal making $4.6 million a year, you're getting tremendous value for your buck, you know, your salary cap dollars. But when you have to sign him to extension and he's getting $21 million, you know, as much as I love DeForest Buckner, you're really not getting a lot of value for your money. I mean, I think the only, if you look at positional value in the league and defensive tackles, I mean, I think the only guy who's going to give you any value, $21 million a year, is Aaron Donald, and that's probably it. So to be able to trade him and get, you know, the 13th overall pick back, and you're going to get, you know, Javon Kinlaw, which, you know, we'll talk about a little bit. But, I mean, if you can even get, you know, 2/3 of Buckner's production out of Kinlaw at, you know, he's going to be making, you know, $4 million a year for the next 4 years. Plus, they were able to trade back a spot and get the 4th-round pick, which I know they gave up again later. But, you know, I think you're looking at Buckner at $21 million a year as opposed to Kinlaw for four. I mean, I think that was a really good deal. I don't expect Kinlaw to be DeForest Buckner, but I think he can give you a lot of that same production. You know, he had a 90.7 pass rush grade last year in college, which was 3rd in the country among interior linemen. His 18% pass rush win rate was 2nd. He had 40 quarterback pressures, which was 5th in the draft class among defensive tackles. He was number 13 on our PFF's big board. So, you know, I think this was just, it was a financial move, obviously, especially with George Kittle coming up with an extension and some of these other guys that they're going to need to re-sign. And, you know, I said Buckner was extremely productive all 4 years. He was a leader in the locker room, a really good guy. Hate to see him go, but I think once, you know, they're at a point where this is a good problem to have. We just have so much talent now that they're, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, you could afford to, you know, overpay guys, and you made a mistake, like, you know, like a Jerick McKinnon signing, which didn't work out. It's okay. But, you know, now with the talent they have now, they have to be really careful with how they're spending their money. And I think, as much as it hurt to see it, I'm letting Buckner go, let him sign somewhere else for that much money was probably the wise move.
I'm looking back at his snap count numbers right here. 1,006 snaps in 2016. That 2016 year was the year I was working at PFF too, doing charting routes. And a lot of those games were those Chip Kelly 49ers. And man, Chip Kelly loved himself some mesh concept and a lot of crossers.
Yes,
a lot of crossers going on with a really bad wide receiver group in 2016.
A lot of three and outs and back on the defense, back on the field 45 yeah. seconds later.
And well, actually in 2019, Buckner came close with 953 snaps. So a little over 50 fewer snaps in 2019. But I believe that counts the postseason too.
Right. So that's another three games too. So, I mean, I mean, I think once Shannon came in, they kind of started subbing him out like a little bit. More like a normal lineman instead of him playing 98% of snaps and being stuck on the field for 70, 80 snaps a game. But I mean, he just hit the productivity and the durability with him. I mean, he just, to me, was one of the more underrated defensive players in the league last year, just because he kind of went about his business, wasn't flashy, and just got the job done. But yeah, unfortunately, you can't keep everybody. And the Niners had a lot of young talent. Unfortunately, that was the one guy they decided to depart with.
Right. And yeah, that durability is the thing, not only not missing games, but just not missing snaps and playing at such a high level. And we heard later, I can't remember who it was. Was it Bosa? Said that he was the one that was making the third down calls too, about what kind of games and stunts the defensive line would be running. So yeah, there's a leadership role that, and I don't know if you can ask a rookie to jump in and do that. You're definitely not going to ask Javon Kinlaw. And I don't think that's one of his strengths right now, is because there was some times when he looked pretty gassed at South Carolina. But I like asking you about Javon Kinlaw because I know that PFF loves Kinlaw's style of play because productive and disruptive. And sometimes you look at statistics and seeing 6 sacks for him at South Carolina doesn't really tell the whole story about how disruptive a player Javon Kinlaw was.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you look at 6 sacks among, you know, I don't know how many snaps he had off the top of my head, but if you can play 7,800 snaps last year, that's less than 1% of his snaps. So it's hard to analyze a player by saying, oh, he only had 6 sacks. You know, that you're taking in only 1% of his play, not the other 99%, and all the pressures, the other disruptions, and against the run, et cetera, et cetera. So, like I said, we liked him a lot. He was our number one defensive tackle. He was number 13 on our big board. So we definitely liked that pick. And I think it's, you know, replacing Buckner is going to be kind of a by committee thing. I think it's going to be a lot of Kinlaw. You're going to see, I think, DJ Jones have a bigger role, especially, I think, rushing the passer. You know, Julian Taylor's another guy I think will hopefully contribute a little bit. So, I think, you know, you don't have one guy who's going to replace DeForest Buckner. I see more 3 or 4 guys, I think, and hopefully get a lot of the job done.
More with Jeff Deeney, Pro Football Focus analyst, talking positional value, Eric Armstead, and looking at the rest of the 49ers 2020 draft. Have you ordered yourself some Built Bars yet? If not, and if you just need another box, go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and this week a special offer through May 31st for Memorial Week, $5 off every box of Built Bars, and four new flavors: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, blueberry lemon. That goes with their already 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut free flavors. Bars are covered in 100% delicious chocolate. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high in fiber. It's a go-to snack. It tastes delicious and you feel good about eating them because they're healthy. 20 grams of protein in the peanut butter flavor, only 170 calories, and 3 grams of sugar with 3 grams of net carbs. If you want to go to the mint brownie flavor, one of my favorites, 110 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. So go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order, an extra $5 off this week only. Use promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. It's interesting that, because I thought, okay, you can't pay Buckner that much money. Like you mentioned, it's Aaron Donald's one thing, but DeForest Buckner, as good as he was, $22 million a year, and the fact that you get an offer of a first-round draft pick, if you're the 49ers, you have to take that. But then I thought, okay, defensive tackle then, that's going to be a group effort replacing Buckner because you can't really replace Buckner inside, and it becomes a new conversation about positional value. And I want to know your thoughts and what the official PFF stance is, because I know they have strong opinions over there about positional value and what positions you should be putting resources into. Is it a smart move to be drafting first round defensive tackles, period? And was that the right way to go about it, to get a cheaper version of a stud player inside? Or is maybe another position more valuable that the Niners should have tried to target with that 14th selection? And sort of to piggyback on that question, and we can break this up, but I got to get this out because it's in my mind right now. And I was asked this question on a mailbag show earlier this week about what's more important, wide receiver or defensive tackle, who is the more important player to hit for the 49ers in the first round between Brandon Ayuk and Javon Kinlaw. And I know that in the lead up to the draft this year, I know PFF has always been really big with cornerbacks and their value, and it's basically like quarterback and then corners. And I still think it's defensive ends and offensive tackles, and I know PFF still believes in the value of those positions, but I was surprised how high PFF was valuing the wide receiver position before the draft, and it seems like it's quarterback, corner, then wide receiver as far as positional value, looking at how PFF looks at things. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, I think if you're looking from like a wins above replacement or war kind of stat, it's interesting because you know, obviously a quarterback is the most valuable, and it kind of gets more towards the farther away from the ball, the more valuable you are. And so I think, like I said, the wide receivers and the corners kind of come next, and then actually, you know, the tight ends are after that. And I think then you start getting to the defensive ends and stuff. And I think the main reason actually for that is, well, there's a lot of reasons, but I think one reason why you look at it, well, why aren't defensive ends maybe from a wins above replacement standpoint more valuable, is that a lot of things kind of like, you know, like a false start or an offsides penalty, like, you know, on first and 10 and stuff will cause, it's like a drop of like one expected point. If a holding penalty or a roughing the passer penalty is actually even more. And so if you're an offensive tackle and you commit a holding penalty and that's like, you know, minus one or two expected points, it's hard to do a lot of good things to make up for that. I think your defensive end's a little easier because you can get a sack or strip sack, a fumble, a lot of other different things, you know, disruptive plays. But I think along the offensive line, especially when you get more towards the interior, it's a little tougher to make up for some of those mistakes. I think those guys away from the ball, the wide receivers make the big plays, the corners and stuff that are involved in the passing game, the wins above replacement effects end up being a little higher. I think it is a fair question about Kinlaw. You know, defensive tackles from a positional value standpoint is not quite as valuable as some of the skill position spots or even, you know, defensive end. I think the one counter to that is that while Kinlaw is good against the run, his forte is rushing the passer from the interior. And when you do get pressure from the inside, that is the more disruptive pass pressure as opposed to from the edge. It's easier to get pass pressure from the edge. But I think, you know, it kind of goes both ways, or I think, you know, defensive tackle isn't one of your more from a positional value standpoint, one of the more valuable positions. But the stuff that is the most valuable in rushing the passer is what he does well.
That brings us to another guy who is listed a lot as defensive end. I wonder if it should be defensive tackle next to Eric Armstead's name. And we had talked a lot about this on Twitter privately over DMs. And I want to get this out there because to me, the most value for Eric Armstead was when he was rushing from the inside, and he does good work as a base end on early downs, but I want to see him inside a lot. And if the 49ers are in nickel, Eric Armstead to me should be lined up inside and getting after the quarterback in that way. So how does the PFF numbers either say I'm an idiot and I'm wrong about that, or that yes, Eric Armstead should be inside?
Yeah, I guess for his official position, we have him as an edge defender, and that's just because he's played more snaps on the edge as opposed to inside. He's pretty much the edge guy on the base defense. And then when in nickel package, sometimes he's inside, every once in a while he's on the outside. We were talking about franchise tags and stuff like that earlier in the year before they re-signed him. He would have been tagged as an edge defender just because he's played more snaps there. If you look at it from a grading and a pass rush productivity standpoint, he's more productive on the edge as a run defender. But he's more productive as a pass rusher inside, especially on those nickel downs. It's kind of similar to, Solomon Thomas, kind of same way, though obviously Armstead is far superior of a player and more productive than Thomas is, but Thomas is kind of the same way where he's, better on the edge defending the run, but he's a slightly better pass rusher when he's inside too. So I think, with Buckner being gone, that, we talked about, kind of replacing him by committee with, Kinlaw and Jones and Taylor, maybe some other guys. We may see Armstead inside a little more, especially in those nickel packages where he seems to be more productive as a pass rusher, and maybe stick on the outside only, those base defenses against the run. It'll be interesting to see the snap count this year now that Buckner is gone, if he ends up being inside more than 50% of the time, or in the past he's been on the edge more often than not.
There's also some times, and I know the way that PFF charts defensive linemen, and I've seen some numbers that I thought were way off when I saw them. And so when I looked at the numbers that you gave me, it seems a lot closer to what his snap percentage was, because I think I saw somewhere of his 800 or so snaps that he was only in the interior like 100 snaps. And I was like, well, no, that can't be right, just from my memory. And then looking at the PFF I don't even know what you call it, but the PFF player participation where those guys are, right, and the data there. Can you clear that up? Where exactly was he lining up when he was inside and outside? Was it closer to a 50-50 split?
Yeah. So, and if anybody's listening is like a premium stats subscriber, you've probably seen this already. We don't really just say, when we say where they lined up, it wasn't like, okay, left defensive end, left defensive tackle, nose tackle, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of gets a little more complicated. So there's outside left end and outside right end. That's basically if they're completely outside the tackle, it's kind of like a wide nine type thing where they've lined up way outside. If they're in between like the B gap and the tackle, if it's the right tackle, it would be his right shoulder. So anywhere from the B gap to where they would be, shading the tackle, I guess, basically. We basically call that as like a left end or a right end. If they're between the A gap and the B gap, it's, left tackle, right tackle. And then if they're at the nose, if they're, head on right at the nose, like a zero tack, there's nose tackle. And then we actually, if they're shading kind of the center as like a one tack, they'll be like left nose tackle, left right, or right nose tackle. That's kind of the brief explanation. But it's basically when we chart where they line up, it's more of where they line up across from the offensive lineman and not the four down lineman you might have. So, if you count like playoffs last year too, I think he had 909 total snaps. I'm doing the math in my head real quick. So 517 of those 909. So almost 60%. He was outside, either left outside or right outside end. And then a little less than 400, he was inside. Where it gets a little tricky is that left end and right end where he's between the B gap or shading the tackle, because 90% of those times he's an inside player, but every once in a while, if there isn't a wide guy, he might be over the tackle where he's actually the defensive end. So that's where it gets tricky when we try to look at, is he better inside or outside? Because sometimes he's left end in our system and he's, you know, lined up against a tackle and he's the defensive end and sometimes he's the defensive tackle on that same, and he's lined up in the exact same spot. So,
right. So like when you're a three tech and you're wide nine, your interior guy can be pretty wide himself. So it might, you know, might come up in the system as left end or right end, but he's technically a defensive tackle on that play.
Right. So we kind of look at it. So when I look at more of an inside and outside, it's basically, is there a defensive end outside of him or not when we're analyzing it? And so, yeah, we looked at in his pressure rate, his sack rate, and his pass rush grade were all higher when rushing as an interior line as opposed to someone on the edge.
That's interesting. So basically he was 60-40 end to tackle last year. I would like to see that personally flipped, but the fact that you have DJ Jones is a really good player and you drafted a first round defensive tackle, it would seem to me that the 49ers are treating Eric Armstead more as an end than a tackle too, as far as personnel moves go. So that would say to me, maybe they aren't expecting to play him inside more.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because I think this is where losing Buckner is the factor. Because obviously you figure if they're in base, you know, hypothetically 30% of the time, you're going to see Armstead as the edge guy all 30% of the time there. But the other 70% of the time when they're nickel, you know, is he half and half? Is he, you know, inside, you know, 50 of those 70% of the snaps? I think, you know, with Buckner on the field and not on the field anymore, I would think he's going to play a little more inside on those nickel downs. You know, it's going to be hard to say, but I could see where, you know, if it's 60-40 now, I wouldn't surprise you if it's more of a 50-50 balance, you know, next season, just because I think there's a lot of Buckner's pass rush snaps to be had. And I think some of those will go to Armstead. I think you'll see some go to Jones. Obviously, Kinlaw's going to get a ton of them as well. But I think you may see him inside just a little bit more. We've seen him in the past.
What about the rest of the 49ers draft class? A couple of wide receivers, an offensive lineman, obviously the big trade for Trent Williams, all that coming up. I want to talk wide receivers and, of course, Niners first rounder Brandon Ayuk, but on the subject of pass rushers and how much PFF loves players like Javon Kinlaw because of the disruption, which disruption equals production, right? And Eric Armstead's the same way, but Nick Bosa, out of this world, also collecting sacks, but he's disruptive almost on every single play, whether it's run or pass. And I know PFF loves Nick Bosa. How good of a rookie season did Nick Bosa have in your world?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, you don't need to be a football expert to know how dominant he was. I mean, just looking, I mean, even in the Super Bowl, he had one of his best games. He had 12 pressures just in the Super Bowl alone. He had 102 in the season if you include the playoffs. But he had 89.8 overall grade, which for a rookie is just ridiculous. I mean, that's elite level. You know, I mean, obviously defensive rookie of the year. And I mean, obviously the sky's the limit for him. He just, you know, elite pass rusher, really good against the run. I mean, really isn't anything he can't do at his position. And I mean, I think the key thing, which was kind of the big concern coming in, was him staying healthy. And he pretty much, you know, didn't miss a game. We're huge proponents of Nick Bosa, just like everybody else is. And I mean, I think, like I said, the sky's the limit for him, obviously.
Looking at the other first round pick for the 49ers, wide receiver Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State, how did PFF have him ranked? And are there any numbers that jump out to you when you look at the data for Ayuk? Because he only had one big year of production at Arizona State. What stands out from that year of production?
Yeah, I mean, I think he fits into that Kyle Shanahan, you know, thing of, you know, guys who are just completely dangerous after the catch. Like you've seen with Debo Samuel and, you know, George Kittle's another guy. He played, you know, a couple years of junior college ball at Sierra College in Rockland. So if you're old like me, you remember that was the Niners training camp back in the, you know, the 80s, yes, and 90s before you had to move to Arizona State. But I mean, the one big stat that jumps out at me is he averaged 10.9 yards a catch after the catch last year at Arizona State, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, and they realized he was a guy who, you know, just get the ball in his hands, let him do his thing. They threw a ton of wide receiver screens. He averaged 10.2 yards a catch on wide receiver screens last year. Just incredibly productive receiver. Obviously, he's still a little bit raw. I think the one nit on him is he had 14 contested targets when he was at Arizona State. He only caught three of them. So, I mean, he needs to be a little more physical going after the ball. But just really dangerous after the catch. Arizona State quarterbacks had 133.9 passer rating when targeting him last year. He's a threat in the return game. I think he averaged 32 yards a kickoff return and 16 yards a punt return last season. So he's another guy in addition to all the other guy, Niner guys, the Trent Taylors and Richie James, the world, some of these other guys who can be a kicker, punt returner possibly. But I think you look at Debo last year, who averaged 8.5 yards after the catch, which was second in the league among wide receivers. You look at Ayuk, who averaged 10.9 yards after the catch last season. You look at Kittle, who we've been collecting data, I think, since 2004, if I remember correctly. And in 2018, George Kittle had 873 yards after the catch on the season, which was a PFF record. No other player since 2004 has had that many running back, wide receiver, tight end, anybody. So you got three guys, and then we begin to, Juwan Jennings later is another possibility of guys who are all extremely dangerous once they get the ball in their hands.
Yeah, the 10.9 yards after the catch per catch is crazy because some receivers don't average, they barely average 10.9 per catch, period, let alone after the catch. That's a wild number. And he shows enough physicality with the ball in his hands, which makes me believe that there's a little bit more there as far as contested catch with his arm length, that he should be able to develop that because, and he doesn't really put a lot of effort into blocking, but he shows it's not like he's afraid to be physical because you can see how physical he is with the ball in his hands. So I think there is potential for him to get a lot better at those contested catch situations just as he gets more reps as a wide receiver because he's somewhat, I don't know if he's necessarily new to the position because he played some defensive back and some running back in his past and returned kicks and did so many things just focusing on and specializing in being a wide receiver, I think will help him as he goes forward. And I think if you are on the 49ers roster, I think it might be a little contagious that you're going to give some effort as a blocker too.
Right, exactly. And I think, I think it's, like you said, he's definitely very physical once he has the ball in his hands. And I think it's probably more just, we said, maybe lack of experience at the position. And I think just, he's like, 14 contested targets is a bit of a small sample size. So you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt as well. But that was like the only thing that like jumped out of us as kind of something to look out for. But I mean, you look at some of these guys now, and it's like I said, Shanahan clearly has a I don't say a type, but he definitely likes these guys who are really dangerous off of the catch, and they have a bunch of them now.
Yep, and everyone has to line up in the slot, and that's definitely exactly one of his things. And one of my listeners joked about it. He's like, okay, there's a little slot, a big slot, an outside slot, an inside slot, a running back slot, an H-back slot. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different kind of slots.
I mean, it's receivers. Really interesting. If you look at the wide receiver crew, and I mean, I think you got, obviously you have some guys with some question marks because I think Trent Taylor and Hurd are both question marks just from a health standpoint. I mean, I think, Trent Taylor's shown he can be productive when he's been healthy. I mean, we saw some flashes with Hurd in the preseason last year. I think IU just has some question marks just because he's raw and is a rookie, but they have, if some of these question marks pan out, I mean, they have the ability to have a very strong receiving core this year. And, if none of them pan out, then you kind of go back to where it's a little mediocre because, Dante Pettis is another guy who's obviously a huge question mark. And this is kind of a make or break year, I think, with him for the 49ers. But they have the potential to have a really strong receiving core this year if everything pans out.
Let's stick with wide receivers and the 7th round pick by the Niners out of Tennessee, Juwan Jennings, another guy who's pretty good after the catch, but it looks much different than Brandon Ayuk. Does it seem to you that Juwan Jennings is somewhat Jalen Hurd insurance as that bigger slot receiver that can do things after the catch?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually what I had in my notes was exactly that. I think you look at two guys who, I think Jennings was listed at 6'3 and 215 pounds. And just like, Jalen Hurd last year is, big receiver who ran almost all of his pass routes exclusively in the slot last year. I think off the top of my head, I want to say it was somewhere around 90% of his pass routes were in the slot. Looking that up as I'm talking. But, we were a huge fan of his. He led all the wide receivers in the nation last year with 30 missed tackles, forced. Again, very physical after the catch. CeeDee Lamb was second with 26, by the way. So again, just another guy really dangerous with the ball in his hands, just a beast to bring down after the catch. We actually, PFF's big board actually had him at number 70. I know he had some kind of off the field question marks there, but we were extremely high with him. I thought that was a really good value getting him in the 7th round. Like I said, I don't know if that's kind of, Jalen Hurd insurance or what they play with. Like I said, it's interesting. You have, Hurd and Jennings are two really big guys who, line up mostly in the slot, and you kind of have guys like, Trent Taylor, who's kind of your small Wes Welker type, that's, mostly a slot receiver too. So if all of these guys happen to be healthy, it's really going to be interesting to see what they do with them all.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun camp competition. Probably my favorite camp competition this year is at wide receiver. And a lot of people ask me, okay, is Jalen Hurd or Juwan Jennings going to be converted to tight end? And the more I think about it, the more I feel like no. And in fact, Shanahan will treat them like tight ends as those big slot receivers. And you can motion them into the backfield. You can move them closer to the line of scrimmage if you want. You can, you know, have them line up in tight. You can have them line up a little bit out wide. But I think it feels to me like Shanahan would rather other teams treat them like a wide receiver. Then he's got numbers in the run game and he can bully.
Right. Yeah. You line up on those guys in the slot and you got Kittle, you know, lined up in line and you start to run the ball down their throats. You got a couple skill position guys. You can, you know, start mowing people down, you know, at the second level.
Last thing here, Jeff, and I really appreciate the time. The other two draft picks, fifth rounder, Colton McKivitz, offensive tackle out of West Virginia, and the tight end, Charlie Warner out of Georgia. Anything stand out with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, McKivitz is an interesting pick just because I think they seem to have, you know, now that they've been able to replace Staley with Trent Williams, which I thought was an absolute, I mean, you're going to talk about steals of the draft. So to me, that was the steal of the draft to get him for a third or fifth round pick. Was ridiculous. I mean, I think I, you know, replacing a Hall of Fame tackle for somebody with, you know, two later picks who I think at this point in his career compared to where Staley was at his age and where his physical condition, I mean, is probably even an upgrade, especially from a pass protection standpoint. So, I mean, that's huge. But I mean, getting back to McKivitz, you know, I mean, he's a guy who's played, you know, both left and right tackle at West Virginia. Definitely grayed out much better as a pass protector than as a run blocker. At his career there at West Virginia, he's you know, last year he had a 76.3 overall grade, 82 as a pass protector, 68 against a run or as a run blocker. Probably better as a zone scheme run blocker, which means obviously he fits here. You know, he allowed just 23 quarterback pressures over his last two seasons at West Virginia. Did play a little bit of guard. His junior year, one game he played some right guard. I know there was some talk about possibly moving him there a little bit when he was picked. It's just gonna be interesting because you got Justin School, you got Sean Coleman coming back, you got Daniel Brunskill, who was tremendous at tackle last year, but looks like he's probably the favorite to be right guard. But I mean, I think he's still some of the, if he doesn't get that job, is in that swing tackle mix as well. So I mean, you got four guys there who are kind of competing to be, you know, the backup tackle position. So it'll be interesting to see how that you know, plays out in August.
And McKivitz did line up at guard at the Senior Bowl. I don't think exclusively, but he did get a lot of reps at guard, I believe, in the Senior Bowl. So that probably helps him. So definitely some versatility. I think some teams probably were worried about his athleticism. He didn't work out very well, and maybe that's why they were talking guard. But Kyle Shanahan's guards need to be athletic and get out there on the move too. So it's
great. And I think just, you know, when you only have so many linemen active, it's really helpful to have these guys that can play several positions.
Yes.
Which I think you look at Brunskill, really, at this point, can almost play all five. Is so valuable to have, whether he's starting or even as a backup. So if someone gets hurt, he can slide in there. You're not having, you know, Mike McGlinchey having to shift a guard all of a sudden like we had early in the year last year.
Out of time here, Jeff. That is Jeff Deeney. You can find him on Twitter at @PFF_Jeff. It's always a pleasure, Jeff, to have you on the show. And we're going to have you on again before another year. We're not going to wait that long, okay?
You got it. Sounds good, Brian.